from past presentations. Some of you may not, which is fine. But if you don't know me, I have ADD. I mean, pretty bad. So I am pretty scattered all over the place. I'm on medication for it, but I neglected to take it this morning. So anyhow, just a little heads up. So the reason I'm telling you that is because of this. I'm going to tell you a story I've probably told here every single time, but if not, that's great. You guys, if you're brand new, and if so, you just got to bear with me. Don't give away the punchline. But the truth is, I go to Colburg United Methodist Church. That's right, United Methodist Church, you know, near Hubbard, Ohio. But just to be, I mean, for full disclosure, to be honest with you, my goal is to one day become Presbyterian. I'm working to earn enough, you know, in order to move from Methodist to Presbyterian. But the reason I tell that story is because the first time I was here, we did the Lord's Prayer, and I said, you know, the trespasses thing. And we know, because it's a doctrinal, it's a theological thing that happens. Methodists, we're just plain country folk, right? We're the people that have farms and live out in the country. We don't have a lot of money, let's just be honest. And so the most important thing to Methodists is our property. And that's why when we say forgive our sins, we're saying trespasses. Get off my lawn. That's a Methodist, okay? So when we're asking for forgiveness, we're saying, like, forgive us our trespasses. But let's be honest. The Presbyterians, that's the church that drives the nicer cars, right? And so for you guys, it's all debt, right? Forgive us our debts. So, but again, my goal is to one day earn enough to be, you know, Presbyterian. But the reason I bring that story up is because as I was doing the Lord's Prayer, I noticed that somebody had taped a copy of the Lord's Prayer in the upper right-hand corner of the pulpit. Did you guys know? You guys should come up and look at this afterwards. But I thought, that's probably for me, right? They were like, Dear John, like, and debts is underlined. No, it's not. But it's really right here. So anyhow, where was I going with it? Who knows? So anyhow, do you guys know what I do for a living? But anyone want to guess? All right, so lately when people ask me, hey, what do you do for a living? I tell them, motivational speaker. But I'm not very good at it, right? But that's kind of really what I do. I genuinely am a corporate trainer, if I can say it. Like, but basically people pay me and I go out and I just talk for a little bit and then I leave. And then I go, thank you, and they give me money. It's amazing. It is the best job ever. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know this was an actual job, right? But I've been learning some stuff about this. You know, and the one thing I'm learning is this, is that if you are going to be an effective motivational speaker, right, then you need to start out with something amazing. Like, when you start your presentation, it has to be this attention-getting, awesome thing, you know? But if you can't do that, then at least the ending, like the ending part of your speech, has to be this memorable, kind of a powerful, impactful statement, right? And so I'm just going to be honest, you guys, you obviously didn't get the awesome beginning, and the end is going to be a little bit of a fizzle. So the third thing I learned as a motivational speaker is if you can't be awesome at the beginning, and if you can't be awesome at the end, then at least make the stuff in between as short as possible. And that is what I'm going for. So today, you guys, look at your watches. You'll be like, I'm out of here, and we'll be the first ones at the restaurant. That will be you guys today. So you got that going for you. But again, I got this ADD thing, and so I'm all over the place. But anyhow, having said that, today is July 4th weekend. And really, it's the birth of our country. And I don't know if it's just me, but my faith life, my life as a Christian, even though I'm okay with separating church and state and whatever, you know, but so much of what I believe as a Christian is tied up with what I believe as an American. And as we listen to these songs, these patriotic songs and hymns, it's because the freedom that we've been given today was hard fought and won through the sacrifice of someone else, right? And that's what I feel like when I'm an American. And that's what I feel like when I'm a Christian. That the grace and the freedom and the liberty that we enjoy today as Christians was hard fought and won through the sacrifice of somebody else. And that's really what I want to talk to you about today. is living a life that's worthy of that sacrifice, right? That's what it means to be an American. So my kids and I are about to, not next week, but the week after that, we're going to go down to Orlando to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, right? And I'm telling you, I am psyched. So I personally have wanted to go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter for the longest time. But my kids weren't into it. And especially my daughter. She's like, I don't want to go there. There's nothing for me to do. I'm like, nothing to do? You could ride the Hogwarts Express and drink butterbeer. Like, I don't know who's more excited, me or the kids. But finally, all three of my kids are into Harry Potter, right? They're reading the books and they're watching the movies and they're just as excited as I am. And so I thought to myself, look, you know what? There's a short window of time where my kids will be into this, right? And so we're going down. And one of the things I'm hoping happens, and I don't know if it does or not, but man, it would be cool if I could get sorted. And here's sorting for you, for those of you who don't know. In this book, Harry Potter, they go to this school, this school, and there's four houses in the school. And there's this magic hat that you put on that tells you which division you belong to. Gryffindor, you know, Slytherin, right? And so that's all this does. You put on this magic hat, and it tells you which house you belong to. And there's this poem that I read in the book that talked about the four different houses. And I don't remember the words, but basically it went like this. How many of you guys have read Harry Potter? Does anyone, like, all right, so you, I'll just talk to you guys. So I remember reading the Harry Potter book, and there was like this little poem that talked about the four houses. You know, and it basically said something like this, you know, if you're in Gryffindor, you're brave and true, you know, if you're in Ravenclaw, you're wise and smart. And it talked about, you know, if you're in Slytherin, you have all this ambition and you want to be in charge. And so it's going through all the houses. And then at the end, literally, it basically said, and Hufflepuff will take the rest. And I'm like, dude, what's the deal? Hufflepuff, like, so you can be in every house, or if there's not a house for you, Hufflepuff will take you, you know? But the more I thought about it, the more I started to say to myself, you know which house I'm in? I'm in Hufflepuff. I am a Hufflepuff. Because you know what Hufflepuff is? Hufflepuff is the United States of America of Hogwarts, right? Hufflepuff is the USA of the Wizarding World. Do you know why? Because Hufflepuff will take anyone. Let's be honest. The United States of America is made up of people that were kicked out of every other decent country in the world, right? And they ended up here. And then what happened? We all got together and we became the awesomest country in the world. Now, I'm sure other countries will have a different opinion of that, right? But they're wrong. We are amazing. I speak from experience because when I was a kid, I grew up in the Philippines. So I've been all over the world, Japan, Korea, well, all over the Asian part of the world anyhow, as you can tell. But anyhow, I used to lay on the grass with my friends, and we used to dream about being in the United States. And you know what we wanted? McDonald's. We didn't have McDonald's growing up, man. Like, I tell you the truth, when I was a senior in high school, they opened up a Burger King. I used to live on the Navy base in the Philippines. They opened up a Burger King on the Air Force base, which was 2.5 hours away. We used to drive 2.5 hours and get a burger, right? And then we would get another one and bring it back so we could eat it when we got back. Like, that's what a big deal it was. Now I'm like, But there's other things to look forward to. But anyhow, so what I want to talk about is being the Hufflepuff of the world, right? Being this place that accepts everyone. And so if we look at our scripture today, I gotta wear these glasses. How sad is that? I don't know when this happened to me, but it did. Okay, so in Matthew chapter 4, starting at verse 18, it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once they left their nets and followed him. And so here's the deal, right? This guy, Jesus, is saying to himself, I am starting out my ministry. I would like to get some people to follow me. I would like to begin a ministry that will literally change the face of the world. I want to change the world in a way that nobody has ever imagined and nobody ever will again. Who should I ask? Oh, there's two guys. Hey, why don't you guys come with me? Okay, let's go. It seems like he should put a little more thought into that, right? It seems that there should be at least like an American Idol type thing where people would come and audition and he could vote, you know, golden buzzer. You know what I mean? Like that way he would get the most talented people, you know, in the country and have them come. But he's just like, I want to start this. Oh, you two guys. What are you guys doing? Nothing. Why don't you come with me? I'll make you fishers of men. I'm in, right? You know what he's doing? He's Hufflepuffing it. He's Hufflepuffing it. He's taking the two, like he's taking whatever, and that's, but here's the cool message about that. I'm going to hold on to that for a second. So there's this story, right, about this woman, and she works downtown. She's something, I don't know, some sort of a busy executive. But this woman goes to work, and as she's going to work one day, she's walking from the parking lot to her business office. And there's this little kid, threadbare clothes, it's cold outside, and he's asking for money. He's begging. He's hungry, he's cold, he's got no place to live, and she walks by this kid, and her heart goes out to this kid. Why is nobody taking care of this kid? Why, you know, what, does he live by himself? I mean, what's going on? Why is he out here in the cold with not enough clothes on, ragged, dirty, tired, obviously hungry? Why is nobody taking care of this child? And they walk by each other on the street and they connect for just a second. And her heart is breaking at the sight of this kid. And so she walks into her business, you know, to the building, and she goes to this important meeting, and all day she's preoccupied by this. And so she's living her life, but she can't get this kid off of her mind. And then she goes home, and as she's driving home in traffic, and, you know, she's thinking about it, she starts to get angry. And finally, at the end of the day, she's going to bed, and she's talking to God. She says, God, what's going on? Like, if you're a God who loves people, why didn't you do anything about this kid? What's going on? You know, if you're a God that's supposed to take care of people, why does this exist in the world? Are you not paying attention? Why didn't you do anything about this? And God, in his wisdom, breaks into her thoughts and to her prayers, and he answers her. He says, oh, I did do something about this. And she goes, what? And God says, I sent you. And so when we go back to the example of the disciples, right, and how God Hufflepuffs it sometimes, here's the thing. God isn't looking for ability. He's looking for availability. If you are willing to drop what you're doing and follow him, he will make you. He will make you into what you need to be. That's what it's all about. A lot of times when I talk about my faith, it's hard for me to separate my faith from my time in the military. I know it seems really weird, but I always think about that. You know, when I think about what it was like for me to join the Army, I didn't know anything. It seems like I didn't even know my left from my right, right? But somebody taught me how to do everything. I mean, they taught me how to eat, sleep, march. I mean, whatever. I mean, they taught me how to walk, how to talk. They taught me everything. And that's what God promises to do to us. If you are willing to drop your nets and follow him, he will teach you whatever you need to know to be effective in his world. Does that make sense? And so, now, people, you guys don't know this about me. Probably Linda does because she knows me longer. But here's the thing. I am not qualified to do the job that I'm doing. I wasn't qualified to do the last job that I had. I mean, literally. So seriously, I will tell you a true story. I applied for this job at the Bear Foundation, and, you know, they said, you know, we'd like you to be the marketing director. But it was like, and I didn't even know what the Bear Foundation was, but it's the marketing director of, like, the entire country that they operate in, right? And they said, you know, we'd like you to be that. Can you do that? And of course I said, sure, I can do that. No, there's no way I can do that. Come on, right? That's the dumbest thing in the world. Like, you expect me to be like a responsible adult? You guys are making a mistake. But so here's what happened, right? When you pulled into the parking lot of the Bear Foundation, in the back of the parking lot, there is a cross. Well, I don't know if you've, but, and it's just like this little outdoor chapel. And so every day I would walk up and I would go to that cross and I would tell God, listen, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I trust you to make sure that whatever needs to happen, happens. And I worked there for, I don't know, a good 10 years or so before they caught on, right? But I'd like to feel that God was able to use me in the growth of that ministry. Even today. So the time before last, there's a lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. that asked me, it's the American, I don't want to drop names, but it's the American Paper and Forest Association. Not that it matters to you, right? But they have offices on K Street. And they said, you know, we would like you to come and train our staff. And I said, really, me? You know, awesome, I'll come do it, right? And so they said, you know, we'll put you up in a hotel, we'll take care of all your expenses, whatever, we'll even pay you something for, you know, motivating our staff again. And I, you know, I think to myself, great, that's awesome. But there's no, if you look at it logically, there's no reason to ask me to come do this for these people, right? So let me just put this in perspective, all right, when we talk about qualified and called. So I'm on my way to Washington, D.C. The hotel that they put me in was the Hay Adams. Okay, so I don't know if you're familiar with Washington, D.C., but if the White House, so the White House is right here, right? And then here's Pennsylvania Avenue. Then across the street from Pennsylvania Avenue is Lafayette Park, which is like a little park. And then if you go through Lafayette Park, right here on the other side of the street, that's the Hay Adams. So when I walk out the front door of the Hay Adams, I'm looking at the White House, and I'm like, this is amazing. You know, like, I can't believe I'm here, right? And people call me like Mr. Schindel. Like, all right. Like, I'm like, Mr. Schindel is my dad. But no, it's me, right? So I'm at the Hay Adams, you know? And I'm, you know, and so I walk out and I'm like, check me out. And so because I'm, you know, so I'm a block from the White House. Like, the place that I'm giving my speech is like, it's on K Street, so I can walk there. So, but truthfully, this is like the first time I've been to Washington, D.C. So I'm like a tourist, you know? So I'm walking around, I'm looking at stuff, I'm like, this is amazing. So here's a story. So I walk out, I'm taking pictures of the White House just like a regular tourist, right? The Secret Service guys are eyeing me up pretty hard, which I get a lot. So on Pennsylvania Avenue here, on the corner of the street is the Renwick Museum. You guys need to go there just to make sure that I'm telling the truth. But there's this place called the Renwick Museum, which apparently has recently been renovated, but reopened again, right? But it looks really cool. So I'm standing across the street, and I'm taking pictures of this Renwick Museum with my phone. Blurry, dang it. So anyhow, but I'm taking pictures, and I notice that as I'm taking pictures, people are walking up the stairs and standing in line, and they're going in, and I'm like, I think I'm going to check out this Renwick Museum. And so I get behind this line of people, and I'm just talking to people, and they're very nice. I'm waiting to go in. And when I get in, there's a guy standing here, and he says this. He goes, the registration table's a little backed up, so if you want to walk around and enjoy the museum, please do so that you can come back and register later. And I'm thinking to myself, I should have noticed something was up, right? But I'm thinking to myself, registration table? But I'm like, maybe they just want to know who's coming to see the museum. And I'm fine. So I just tell the guy, I'm going to do that walk around thing you just mentioned, and I'll come back. And he's like, please enjoy the museum. So I'm walking around the Renwick Museum, and it is nice, I will tell you. But it is, you know, so nice is right here. It's super nice. And what I mean by that is, so I'm walking around looking at the museum. A lady comes up to me, and she has like, you know, glasses of wine. She's like, would you like a glass of wine? I was like, yes, I would. And I swear, as soon as I took that thing, I was about to walk around, somebody says, do you want bacon-wrapped shrimp? Yes, I would like bacon-wrapped shrimp. And so I'm eating like bacon-wrapped shrimp, and there's all kinds of other stuff. I mean, they are handing me food like it's going out of style. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the nicest museum I have ever, ever been to, you know? And I'm like, no wonder my taxes are so high. But I'm like, who cares? You know, like, this is amazing. But then little things seem to happen, okay? So then this one lady, like I noticed in front of me, that there's this guy, he's like, hey, Brian, I wanted you to meet Karen. You know, she works on the third floor. And I'm like, wow, a lot of people know each other. You mean like, so a lot of people know each other here. And then I'm looking around and everybody has like a name tag, right? You know, it's like, hey, you know, like Bill, IT. Or, and I'm like, huh. So I'm thinking to myself, maybe something's going on here that I'm not aware of. So I kind of make my way over to like this lady. She's a security guard, right? So I kind of go over to this lady and I say, so what's going on here? You know, and she goes, what do you mean, what's going on here? And I said, you know, this whole thing. And she goes, this is a private party. She's like, were you not invited? And I said, no. And she says, child, you have to leave right now. And I said, I figured that out. She goes, wait, you have another glass before you go. So at least she was really nice about it, right? So the reason I tell you that story is this. That's the guy they hired, right? That guy is the guy that these guys hired to tell them how to be more professional, okay? Obviously, it's not about ability, right? It's about availability. And if you are willing, God can use you as a tool to accomplish some amazing things. I have this little clip that I want to play if I can. This is the cue for the audiovisual guy. I have this little clip that's going to start playing here. Okay. Right.
We are the wretched refuse. We're the underdog. We're mutts. Here's proof. His nose is cold.
That's true.
But there's no animal that's more faithful, that's more loyal, more lovable than the mutt. Who saw Old Yeller? Who cried when Old Yeller got shot at the end? Nobody cried when Old Yeller got shot, I'm sure.
Come on.
I cried my eyes out.
Yeah, you did.
So we're all dog faces. We're all very, very different. But there is one thing that we all have in common. We were all stupid enough to enlist in the army. We're mutants. There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us. Something seriously wrong with us. We're soldiers. But we're American soldiers. We've been kicking for 200 years. We're 10-1. Now, we don't have to worry about whether or not we've practiced. We don't have to worry about whether Captain Steven wants to have us hung. All we have to do is to be the great American fighting soldier that is inside each one of us. Now do what I do and say what I say and make me proud. Fall in?
For me, that has to be probably the greatest motivational speech ever given to anyone. And every time I hear it, I see Jesus and the disciples. And I see the disciples saying, Lord, what do you want us to do? We've seen you do these miracles. We've seen you heal people and cast out demons. Like, we can't do any of that stuff. And I imagine Jesus saying, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you've never healed anybody before. It doesn't matter that you've never prayed. And like, it doesn't matter. All you need to do is be the Christian that you've been called to be. Now, do what I do and say what I say and make me proud. A couple verses, then I'll let you go. Do what I do, say what I say, and make me proud. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another, and all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins. Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and truth. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ forgave you. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievance you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And so my message to you again is to do what he's done and say what he said and make him proud. Amen.